Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together.
Hi, Laura. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Laura, thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be back.
I'm so happy to have you back. I love your episodes because you read so widely, differently from what I read. And so I'm always curious, like, your curated picks tend to be like the best picks for me to read. So like, it's perfect. And I know my listeners, like, you know, sometimes we want to take a break from thrillers and like romance and cozies, and we just want to talk and like do a little bit deeper issues. But this episode is a more beachy, soapy, like more engaging literary fiction. So tell us what you've been up to, and talk to us about your book that's coming up.
Oh, Laura. Right. So it's a busy year for me here in Madison, Wisconsin, as I get ready to launch my second middle grade novel. So middle grade is like, you know, for 8 to 12 year olds. My first book came out 2 years ago, also middle grade, called Crossing the Pressure Line. So my second one is Marvelous Jackson, and it is a standalone companion to my first book. So they're loosely linked, and they're a lot of the same characters, but they stand alone. So you don't have to read one, you know, without reading the other. But I'm so excited about this book because the main character is Jack, and he made an appearance in Crossing the Pressure Line, and he was very unlikable, and he gave everyone a headache. But I know that beneath the layers of every bully, if you will, there's always some sort of hurt or pain or sorrow or some reason why that child is acting that way he or she is. So I really gave Jack's story a lot of thought. And when Marvelous Jackson begins, he's not in a good place. He's lost his mother, but we knew that in Crossing the Pressure Line. And he's an only child, and his father, who owns a tavern, they live in northern Wisconsin, his dad is always working because he's having a hard time too, obviously, right, with the loss of his wife. And Jack is facing the possibility of unbearable consequences because he's been getting in trouble a lot at school and at home. So he's facing the possibility of being shipped off to boarding school in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan if he doesn't get his act together. So Jack knows that to get his act together, he needs some sort of like sense of purpose, a reason to kind of get out of bed in the morning, if you will. So he promises his dad he's going to find a hobby. And his dad is like, well, what's that going to be? Because everyone around here hunts and fishes, and you're not an outdoor kid, and you don't like to play sports. So what are you going to do? So after a series of unexpected events, and after making a couple brand new friends, Jack rediscovers the love of baking that he and his mother shared when she was alive, when he was a little boy. And so he's like all in. And so he throws himself into learning the finer points of scones and sprinkles, and he starts memorizing recipes, and things are looking up. And then he finds out that the Marvelous Midwest Kids Baking Championship television show is accepting applications for its next season in Chicago, Illinois. And you know, he wants to get himself an audition spot. So that's his story. And the big question is, can he withstand the twists and turns of getting himself from northern Wisconsin to Chicago for this thing that he wants more than anything? So that's my book that's coming out September 10th.
Oh, that sounds so good. I love the fact that you didn't know to Chicago, because when I moved to Chicago, you were such an instrumental person. And my move to Megan, we know it was a weird move, a weird time, but it was so helpful. So I feel like you're doing like the city that you love, like a nod to it.
It's really great because I lived in Chicago myself, even though I'm a Wisconsin girl. The first couple of years out of college, I lived in Chicago, and I love like the dichotomy of going from northern Wisconsin, where it's very rural and trees and lakes, to heading to Chicago, which is the opposite. And the fun thing is, in my first book, In Crossing the Pressure Line, it's the complete reverse. It's a girl in Chicago who's going up north to spend the entire summer up north. And so I love that these two kids are having sort of opposite experiences, but yet there's a lot of common ground between them. So,
This is so exciting.
yeah, thanks.
And I hope we keep writing more books, you know.
Thank you. Well, in between all of this, I'm also trying to write a third manuscript. So I'm working really hard, hopefully, on getting another middle grade novel done. And I envision it as being part of this, community, if you will, of kids that I've created through my two books. So hopefully there'll be a third.
All right, so we've got to talk about your book recommendations. You're a literary fiction person. You love your literary fiction, which is, I love it. Talk to us about like your selection because you did a lot of thought process for this. What's your process like, selecting these books and like what can we expect from this listicle as a whole? And then we're gonna go into the recommendations.
Okay. So when you ask me to be on the show, I love it when you kind of ask me to come up with sort of a pitch, if you will, and sort of look at books that all have something in common, right? And as you mentioned, literary fiction is my favorite genre. But I like to shake it up when I'm on your show because I know not everyone listening loves literary fiction. So what I did is the literary fiction I picked, I was very strategic about this. All of these books are written by women, first of all. That's really important to me when I'm on your show because I love focusing on women writers. But all of these books share something in common, and I think it's that you can envision them being on the screen. And I don't mean a movie screen. I mean a television screen. And I specifically mean soap operas. Because I was born in the 70s. So I grew up in the 80s. And I have distinct memories of watching Falcon Crest and Dallas with my mother on Friday nights. And then, I also watched Another World and Days of Our Lives. I don't even know if these shows are still on TV, but
I mean, Days is still on a Peacock, so it's still on. Days is
it's
still.
amazing, right? I have such great memories of sitting and watching soap operas and all of the lies and deceit and the drama. And particularly when the episode ends, you're always hanging on by a thread, like, wait, this can't end. We need like they're you're on you're they give you all these cliffhangers, right? And so you have to tune in the next day or the next Friday night if it's Dallas or Falcon Crest. So I wanted to focus on books that give you that same sense of soap opera. So I mean this in the best way possible. These are books that are like dishy and juicy and fizzy and sexy and all of those wonderful things, but they're literary fiction. And so it's top-notch writing. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. And I'm really excited.
I am very excited. So I want to do a shameless plug, but I do have a podcast. I have another show that is a Turkish soap opera rewatch. So we watch Turkish telenovelas and we talk about them and recap them because you know what better thing to do? I grew up watching Mexican telenovelas, Colombian telenovelas, and then later on became Turkish the ones in Latin America. I did watch Dallas. My mom was like into Dynasty, Falcon Crest, like all these shows. We're kind of like equal opportunity of soap operas. So I grew up in a delicious diet of telenovelas, like the soapier, the crazier plot, the twist, the cliffhangers. Give it to me now.
Well, it's funny when I told you that that was my idea for this podcast, you were like, "Oh my gosh. I'm in heaven. This is great." Because I was a little nervous. I'm like, "Is this gonna fly?" And when you told me that about your your other endeavor of watching and discussing soap operas, I'm like, okay, I'm in the right place
Yeah,
here.
we're in the right place. So I'm excited because these are books that I'm likely to go pick it up and I'm actually going to read them or listen to them because I actually now I'm an audiobook person. So I'm very excited. So let's start with the recommendations. Let's start with like the first
Get
one.
ready. You're going to be adding a bunch to your list here. Okay, so my first book is The Berry Pickers by Amanda Peters. And this book opens in 1962 when an Indigenous family from Nova Scotia comes down to Maine to pick blueberries for the summer. Okay, so they're sort of at this camp, they're picking blueberries, and their nightmare begins when their youngest child, Ruthie, who's like 4 or 5, is snatched in broad daylight from the side of the blueberry field. They don't know who took her. They don't know where she went. Okay. So obviously that's a horrific experience, trauma with a capital T. And her disappearance really blows a hole in the entire family. So what this book is about is all the years later, how her disappearance has impacted her siblings and her parents, right? And some of them have made better choices than the other, which is where it gets kind of dishy. But it's also like a really substantial book because the author, Amanda Peters, is part Indigenous herself. So she writes with a knowledge and an empathy and a precision that I think are really compelling. And she alternates her chapters between a grown male and a grown female. And I'm not going to tell you how they're connected because it all comes together at the end. But their story is riveting. So like you will gasp, you will cry, you will get really angry. That was my takeaway emotion, was just anger. But it's truly a book that I just found so easy to read because one chapter, I just, you know, you end one chapter and you have to go into the next, just like a soap opera, because you're like, what is happening here? So it's centered around this family and it's great. So The Berry Pickers.
I'm excited for this one. And it's we're in that season. We're in blueberry picking season.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we're going to go from blueberries to peaches for my second book.
There we go.
And I did not do that intentionally, actually, as I was putting my stack together. I was like, oh, it's another fruit book. So Go as a River by Shelley Reed. It's a debut novel and it knocked my socks off. So it's beautifully told. Of all the books I'm talking about today, it's probably the most literary in that it's pretty serious. So it's more like a Falcon Crest, maybe Dallas, like kind of serious and moody and atmospheric. But it's about a 17-year-old girl named Victoria Nash. And she falls head over heels in love, lust, if you will, with Wilson Moon, who's a very strapping young man, kind of a drifter, who lands in her small ranch town of Iola, Colorado. I think it's about 1948. So it's about, you know, 60 whatever years ago. So Victoria is motherless and lonely, and she's burnt out because she sort of acts as like the head servant for her family on this ranch because they're all growing peaches. It's actually a peach orchard. So she's desperate for a sense of adventure. And so when Wilson Moon lands in her town, she gets that adventure and more. So on the heels of this pivotal relationship, Victoria unfortunately faces like a kind of a string of tragedy. And this involves spending a summer by herself in a little hunting shack in the hills overlooking Iola. And that particular season of her life is like one of my most favorite moments in any book I have read lately. Like I loved this section of the book where she's by herself in this little shack. It's just absolutely riveting. So a lot of things happen. Again, gasping, crying. There were Kleenexes involved when I was reading this book. And she really takes quite a journey to wholeness and to understanding. And it's quite miraculous. But at the same time, like she's this very sensual, courageous young woman. And I think she belongs in a soap opera. Like she's amazing. So
you had me at spending a time in the cabin by yourself. As someone who has spent a lot of times alone, I am fascinated by other people's experiences. And I'm like, how did you get through it?
Oh my God, you have to read it then.
It's just this whole part of it. I've been 4 years alone. Like, it really comes down to it, and especially the first year and a half, which is like the toughest one. So understanding other people's experiences and how they come about and how they relate to it and how do you make time pass,
If you read it, you have to tell me what you think of
I
that
will.
section. Like it, I found it so moving, and I couldn't stop reading it because, like you, I think it is really interesting to pick apart why people are alone and why they choose to be alone and what they struggle with, what they don't struggle with. It's really quite an examination. But that's only one of the sections. Like, I don't remember how many sections it's divided into, but the other sections, she's with Wilson, she's with her family, and there's so much drama, relationship drama. So enjoy that one.
I love this. Oh.
Okay.
Oh, I heard about this one.
Oh.
Memphis was reading it. That's all
Oh
I've
my God.
heard.
Okay, so The Guest by Emma Klein. This is a soap opera.
Yes.
Book is warped and it is so scandalous and so delicious. I will tell you, I read it with like a profound sense of anxiety. Like it was one of those books that I'm reading and I'm like clutching it so hard that my fingers are turning white because I'm an anxious person. Interestingly, the main character, Alex, is not so anxious. So it's always interesting when I'm looking at a situation through my anxious lens, and then the character is like not anxious, but is a hot mess. So right there, just so you know, but Alex, the main character of The Guest, is a wayward, very troubled young woman. And she has landed a wealthy boyfriend who lives on Long Island. Okay. And this is all after she's worked as an escort in New York City. So, she's got some issues. But of course, this relationship with her sugar daddy inevitably needs to come to an end, which it does in a spectacular fashion. And you're just watching, like, oh my God, you can't tear your eyes away. It's like watching a car accident, like happening in slow motion. But so her sugar daddy breaks up with her. And I'm not giving anything away because that's the premise of the book. But Alex has like nowhere to go. She has no friends, no family, and like no resources or self-sufficiency to try to figure out how to get by. So she like bums around on Long Island for this week. It takes place over the course of a week because she's convinced that when summer ends and Labor Day happens, she's convinced that on Labor Day, like her entire fortunes are going to change. Like she's so misguided. So she like watching her navigate this experience is it's riveting. And I don't know if you've heard good things about this, but like everyone
I've
who's
had
read this
mixed
book.
reviews, but I remember
Okay.
hearing last year everyone in the Hamptons was reading it. And like the Hamptons is like the ultra uber wealthy, or you have wealthy friends who can all have a summer share and stuff like that. So it was like the go-to beach tree that people were like talking about it. Either loved it or hate it. It was just like this, there was no in between, which is we all love those polarizing books. Like you either love it or you hate it.
I'll tell you this. That's an interesting point. So I loved this book, but I hated Alex. And I think that's also a great soap opera when you have sort of like this villain character, who you can't tear your eyes away from, and she's making such poor choices, and you're like, oh my God, and she's alienating so many people, but yet you can't stop watching, right? And so that was my relationship with this book, is like I didn't like Alex, but that did not deter me from reading the book. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. And to your point, it's a great one for like sipping a cold cocktail with by a pool or a body of water because it just goes down real smooth.
Oh,
So
bless. That was still so beach reads. Yay!
Beach, yes. Okay, so here is an entirely different kind of soap opera. So this is called The Other's Gold, and it's by Elizabeth Ames. So
Yes.
I'll just say right off the bat that the title, The Other's Gold, is based on the Girl Scouts song. I don't know if you were ever in the Girl Scouts, like
No.
make new friends, but keep the old. One is silver, but the other is gold. It's a cute
Oh.
little song that I sang when I was a brownie. So that's where the title came from, although there are no Girl Scout references in this book. It's just the title. But it's a great book. It's about four young women who are randomly matched together as roommates when they go off to college. And they're attending a fictional university called Quincy Hawthorne College. And of course, it's kind of upper crust, but all four of the women have very different backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses. And so you can already tell there are going to be some interesting dynamics, but really the four women come together as a foursome and like love each other deeply. And so their friendship is what holds this particular soap opera together, if you will. So the girls attend college, we get all the sex, the drinking, the trauma, like the drama, all of that. And it's just really interesting to watch. But then what I also like is that the author, Elizabeth Ames, moves the young women from college into their post-college life, which for all of us who went through that, that in and of itself is a drama, you know, when you're like coupling up and getting married or not getting married and trying to have kids or not wanting kids or not being able to have kids. Like there's just so much drama. And some of the things that Elizabeth Ames weaves in are so unexpected. Like I almost threw the book down, which again, kind of a good soap opera, right? When you're sort of like wanting to like throw your shoe at the screen because someone is doing something so dumb. But it's really readable. It's lovely. The writing is beautiful, and I found it really satisfying. So,
I'm
oh,
excited.
and I should also say, I forgot to say this about this book. The threads that pull it together, and this is also very soapy, is that each of the young women kind of gets a spotlight at a different section in the book, and each one of them makes a very bad mistake. And
Ooh.
so they each do something that Elizabeth Ames is really good at this. Like you can see this woman, like her entire life sort of hinging on like the tip of a pin. And you know, like whichever way she goes is going to have really big implications. And whether or not you agree with that decision, it's really riveting to watch. And so it's those women dealing with the fallout of those big mistakes that they've made and the scars that they bear because of them.
This looks so good.
Really good. Really good. Okay. Another one. You've probably heard of this because this was also
Yes, this
an
one,
Instagram darling.
coming in.
Yep.
I like Kelly. She did the Little Nanny one,
That's
such
a
a
fun
fun
age.
age. So this is her second book, which is just her second novel is just as good from the reviews that I heard.
Yeah. So I think this is another book. The people, just like we were talking about before, I feel like you kind of love it or hate it. But again, I fall into the category where I loved it because reading it was such a great pleasure for me, even though I like hated most of the characters, which is okay. I mean, that's kind of, again, a good soap opera vibe. So Come and Get It is also a college novel, just like the other's Gold. And this time it takes place all within a dormitory, and it's the Belgrade Dormitory at the University of Arkansas, Fayetteville. And I'm just going to tell you, like, right from the beginning, it's a soap opera. Lies, yes. Deceit, yes. Sex, yes. Blood, yes. So you get all of it in this book. So it, the glue holding the book together is Millie Cousins, who's a fifth-year senior. She's a resident assistant. She just wants to graduate and like get a job and buy a house. She's just, you know, finishing up her college experience. But unfortunately for her, she gets a wicked section in her RA section of the dorm. The suite next to her is are these young women that live next door to her, and they're just a hot mess. And there's so much drama there. But the interesting thing about this story is things get even more warped when an interloper arrives on campus, and it's a woman named Agatha, and she's sort of like a professor slash writer slash reporter. And she's come to do some research to write a book, and she wants to interview some college students. So Millie sets up some interviews for Agatha with these women in her dorm so that Agatha can talk to them. But what ends up happening is that Agatha starts eavesdropping on them. It's so unethical, right? And she decides that maybe she wants to like not write a book and instead write an exposé of these women for Teen Vogue magazine. Okay, so like you can already see, like things are gonna get really warped here. The storyline, I think, is really frenetic and really unexpected. And there are some moments that might be a stretch for us as readers. But again, isn't that what a soap opera is? Like sometimes you just have to like swallow it and accept it. I read it on vacation last month. I couldn't put it down. But again, like all of the books I'm choosing today, Kylie Reid, as you mentioned, she wrote Such a Fun Age. She really unpacks issues of race and class and ambition and money. She did it in her first novel and she does it in here. And she does it in such a way that as I'm reading it, like there are times when I find myself laughing, you know, because of what's going on. And then I'm like, oh my God, wait, I shouldn't be laughing. Or should I? Like, what is she trying to say? And I'm not always sure what she's trying to say, but that's okay because I think reading it is just really satisfying. So.
Oh, I'm at it. It's fine. Yeah, I'm in a college.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's such a good college. It's so college-y. It's like,
yeah,
it's so great.
Well, that was the age. My first career was working at college. I work at it's a university. Like, I was a house mom for a Greek for like a sorority house. I worked in student affairs, like in Greek life and like campus programming, and so. It's the only age group that I actually appreciate kids because they're 18, they're adults, but they're not really adults. They're kind of fake adults.
They're baby adults. That's how I look at them.
They're baby adults. It's a fun age to work with.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it's frustrating as fuck because you see all these train wrecks happen and you're like, ooh.
You have to read this, Laura, like yes. Because you are Millie. Then, like Millie is just trying to hold it all together, and oh my God, you're gonna just like you will wince and you will gasp and you will like cover your eyes. I mean, it's it's great.
Awesome.
Okay, so then I have sort of a bonus book because you asked for like 5 recommendations, and then the last question you asked me was what was the last book you read.
Yep.
And so I wanted to share that because it fits like perfectly into this whole trope that we're talking about today. So have you read?
I did. I read it.
Okay. So then you already know about this book, but I'm going to talk about it anyway.
Yes, please do.
Still listening, haven't read it. So, okay. I just finished this last week and I loved it. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's a soap opera. So I don't think it fits quite within our trope, but it's about TV and it's based on Saturday Night Live, which of course Curtis Sittenfeld doesn't call Saturday Night Live. She calls it The Night Owls, TNO, but she did a ton of research on Saturday Night Live, like how their show is produced, which is actually really riveting. And that's how she came up with her idea of TNO. And so I thought, oh my gosh, this would be a great book to talk about today, just because again, TV. But if you can get into like an SNL mindset, then you've got this book. So Curtis Sittenfeld is one of my favorite contemporary writers. Much like Kylie Reid, she touches on such big things, but she does it in such a way that it's like eating cheese covered broccoli. You know, like you're getting your nutrients, you're getting your minerals, you're getting the fiber, all the good things, but then there's like cheese all over the top. And so it tastes so good and it's so palatable.
Yeah.
So romantic comedy, her main character, as you know, is Sally Mills. Mills. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. Well, whatever. So it's she Sally. Is, what was that?
It's Sally.
Sally. That's all we need to know. She's adorable. She's like a 30-something young woman who is a sketch writer for TNO. And she describes herself as like mousy and like not the most glamorous one in the room, but she's like fine with that, right? Because she's smutty, funny, she's smart. And one of her best friends though is also a sketch writer and he's the dorky Danny Horst. Like she describes him as like dorky and stinky and just goofy, right? Danny Horst, in spite of all that, manages to nab this like famous girlfriend who comes on TNO to be the guest host. And she and Danny fall head over heels in love with each other. So Sally is pissed off. She's like, what is this? The Danny Horst rule? Like, why is it that the dorky guys can get the gorgeous girls, but like the dorky girls can't get the hot guys? So that's the whole premise of this book is the Danny Horst rule, right? So then fast forward and this gorgeous popular singer comes on, Noah Brewster, and he is both the musical guest and the host of TNO, and he and Sally have instant chemistry between them. So is the Danny Horst rule about to be broken? I'm not going to tell, but I will say that this book is absolutely delightful. And it's so funny. But at the same time, towards the end of the book, I cried numerous times. And I will say it was the pandemic sections. I'm not giving anything away and saying
it's a strong, like, so the basically the format is it's before the pandemic, a couple of years before the pandemic, we got this experience, and then the pandemic happens, and it's early pandemic. It's not just like 2021. No, like this is early
2020.
It's 2020, summer 2020. We're like, what are we doing? And it's I don't know, I forgot about the space. I know we were talking at that time, but I forgot so much of like the trauma. And so we do get a lot of like the trauma that we may have forgotten. And it's interesting because I think in some ways it gives you reflection of like, you know, how far we've come and how different things are and like what it shifted us. But it was I loved it. I had people who hated it. I love this book. I felt like this was like a delightful way of looking at it. It's not romance itself. It's a take on society issues that we normally see, and then a take on the pandemic that, you know.
There's so many layers to it, like you said, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that I really was sort of, I lost my breath a couple times reading the pandemic section, because I think you're right. Like, I think that I sort of compartmentalized that time and kind of set it aside, and it brought it all back, but in such a beautiful way and in a funny way. That's, I don't know how Curtis Sittenfeld does that, how she's so funny. She has such a great sense of humor, and there's such like lightness to it, but yet she covers such meaningful ground. It sounds like you agree with me. I mean,
it just there's something to be said about this book that really shifted the way I look at things, and even the relationships that I looked at, like, because I understood Sally's insecurities, so, like, I understood where she was coming from, and I understood, I could see the Noah's point of view, but at the same time, like, as a woman in living in New York in your 30s is very different than being a male, like, in your 30s and being successful and having the world at your fingers. And so it was a powerful, riveting book to read.
Absolutely.
And it's so soapy. Like, you're so
it is soapy. You're right.
You get the inside of Saturday Night Live. It's like watching a documentary of how the Saturday Night Live gets soapy. So
yes.
I never work in that place. There's no way.
I just think
fascinating.
It's fascinating, the research she did. And I loved reading her acknowledgments at the end, where she references all the books that she read and the people that she talked to, you know, to make sure that she was getting all those details correct. So it's really interesting. I couldn't put it down. I mean, really, it was one of those books that kept me up at night, which is the best kind of book. So,
Laura, tell us where you can find me online.
You can find me online at, well, I'm on Instagram most, Laura at the library. And between each of those words are underscores, Laura at the library. So join me there. And my website for my middle grade books is laurabirdbooks.com. LauraBird books.com. So that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Thank you, Laura, for being on the show.
I love being on your show. I hope you'll have me back. It's really fun.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourenextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.